Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Don't miss your free chance to tune into Benzinga's very own bootcamp series on November 20th. If you're looking to dive into new concepts and grow your account, this one's for you.
What's up, my friends? Very excited to be with you for a special edition of Cannabis Hour. To be honest, I'm not always the one doing these, but hopefully we'll be able to do more of these. To give you a little bit of background here, how this came about, Javier, Patrick, Aaron, and I attended MJ Biz, a little over a week ago. Awesome event. Got to see a ton of people we all know, you've heard of from the last year and a half plus. But we didn't get to everybody. It was impossible to do that. We have a lot of those headlines available on Benzinga.com/cannabis for the CEOs we got to interview there. But we are still getting some of these interviews in from the cool people we were able to meet there. And along with that, we want to give you a holistic sense of this industry. And honestly, a sector that we don't get to cover a lot. Is what we're going to hear about next. And I'm not going to give away too much because I want you to tune in, listen up to what Ross Kirsch, the founder and CEO of Dimapack, has to say. Very excited for this. So Aaron, if we could go ahead and bring Ross over, let's dive right in. Ross, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, pumped to have you, man. So we're excited. Benzinga, super financially focused media. So we want to get into how you're affecting the space and how you play in it. But I want to hear about you first, your journey into cannabis, and if you could go into a little bit about Dimapack as well.
Okay. So my journey in the cannabis industry started in 2008. I had lived in China for 3.5 years. I have a family with a long history of working overseas. And a large business owner approached me asking if I'd be able to develop a smell-proof bag that would be retail ready and they could sell it for people who are looking to carry their medicine on them without having to worry about a scent. And over the next few years, I built up a good distribution network with a lot of dispensary owners. And as word about the pouches spread, in 2013, an owner of one of the dispensaries in Denver asked me if I could invent a child-resistant pouch to meet the new laws that were coming into place for recreational use in Colorado. So about 8 weeks later, that was Halloween of 2013. 8 weeks later, we were able to get a product to market. I'm very proud to say we were the first bag used in the history of any retail sales of cannabis. So nice. We played a big role in that part, just getting the industry off the ground in Colorado. And since then, we've been working side by side with our customers to help them really scale up their businesses. And obviously, it's a very challenging industry with a lot of fast-moving parts, so it's certainly been a good challenge. But really, the company has been focused the whole time on manufacturing products that, for storage issues that either never existed before or the solutions that existed are really poor. So for us, we really work with our customers to identify these gaps in the market and to make sure that we can fill those gaps with really good packaging.
How fast changing are the needs for your services and the products you create? How much do you have to adjust those over time?
That's a good question. It really depends most of the time on regulations. So just using that Colorado example, when they got off the ground, they had switched their packaging regulations at least twice within the first 2 years. So a lot of our customers who had gone and had packaging printed, needed to rush to get new packaging printed with the new labeling, the new warnings that were on it. So that, as one example, that's just one part. But then there's the other side, which is, you know, as a mandatory part of the sale of a product, the packaging that we sell is just absolutely critical to these guys. So when they're running out or they realize demand is higher than they thought, you know, we really scramble to get them what they need and make sure that they're not stuck empty-handed, or of course that the patients are stuck empty-handed.
Right. Very important. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you stemmed from, have you been packaging pre-cannabis, pre-2008? Were you developing packaging?
I was, but it was part of a comprehensive line. Okay. We were developing all sorts of products for the Hustler brand. We had the license for it. So I was making everything from mannequins to clothing to packaging and everything in between. And that's really where the ability to learn how to create and develop products, that's really where my experience came into play. So that's really how I, like I was saying before, how I focus the business on solving all of these needs, because I do know product development very well. It's just more of identifying where are the problems in this industry that the business owners are facing, and how can we make it better? How can we fix it?
Yeah, I want to shift gears a little bit to more of your clientele. And obviously, I feel free to tell me if you can't talk about certain things. We haven't discussed beforehand what is, discussable, for lack of a real term. But in terms of your clientele, how deep do you go with them? If you're offering packaging solutions for, a chain of dispensaries in Colorado and they want to expand to another state, are you automatically secured that contract?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I think in this industry, you really have to deliver on your word and, of course, have good pricing. But there's no guarantee of tomorrow with this industry, especially with all the consolidation that's going on. There's just a tremendous amount of change that goes on. But when customers are looking to expand to a new state, of course, we help them out with the regulatory and compliance side. They have their own internal team, but if we notice anything is off, we have the internal expertise to be able to identify that. But a big part of it is also really going deep with them on inventory planning and product development. Do they have any new product lines that are coming out? When are they looking to launch them? And we work with them to make sure, again, that they have everything when they need to have it. And it really makes their lives a lot easier. As you just said, expanding to all these different states right now is a tremendous task. And packaging is certainly not something that stands out in people's mind as a critical thing to address. I mean, especially considering licenses, et cetera. So we have to take a lot of that on to help them out. So I would say we get pretty deep with our customers.
Absolutely. Well, and I want to expand on that, especially since you have experience living in China, and I'm assuming working over there. How far internationally can you go right now?
Well, China's obviously a bit of a challenge,
yeah,
the shipping containers and all the problems coming in from overseas. So we do have domestic manufacturing. That's not the only manufacturing sources that we have. We have plants in Canada and in the US. So we've expanded quite a bit. But it certainly is a challenging time to do business overseas and to bring goods in. But again, I think the big part of it is having the experience and knowing how to navigate these logistical nightmares. So that way you end up getting what you need. Although I don't think anybody has totally escaped unharmed. There have been tremendous delays and you really do what you can. It's not easy in any part of this industry. There's always these hiccups and it's just a part of it. You got to roll with it.
Amen to that. So it sounds to me like you have packaging contracts in Canada, in the US, any other international markets that we can speak to?
Well, we don't have contracts, but we do have customers in Colombia, as well as Portugal and Germany and the UK. So we have expanded quite a bit. Yeah, the medical programs that are coming underway around the world are very, very, very different than what's going on in the US. They're much more centrally planned by the governments, but they're presenting tremendous opportunities for this industry outside of the US for sure.
What does that do to your products? Obviously, I'm assuming you have similar base models, but when looking at a country like the US versus a country like Colombia or a country like Germany, and the massive opportunity with Europe. How does that shift your product line?
Well, the advantage of a company like ours is that we develop all of our products. They're proprietary and in-house. So we have patents for our products that extend to Europe. So for us, it's just a tremendous opportunity to expand our distribution. It presents new challenges. We're right now working on expanding our facilities so that way we have some production in Europe as well, which, of course, COVID has prevented. COVID has presented a lot of issues with that, just going over there, meeting with them. But for us, it's a tremendous opportunity to really reach out to the world. I think that our packaging solutions are very unique, and they're not just applicable to cannabis. They can be applicable to a lot of industries. So, I mean, for instance, we have Novartis as a customer and Walgreens as a customer. So when we look at Europe, we just see the expansion opportunities for the industry and beyond to just be absolutely tremendous.
Fantastic. So a couple more points I want to touch to. When you package for, say, an MSO or an SSO, does it differ for you than packaging, say, for a brand? If that makes sense. I know a lot of these MSOs have their own brands, but say you are licensed by Cookies. Is that going to be a different type of contract for you than if you're licensed by Trulieve?
I would say absolutely. And the reason for that, it would really be, I think, the licensing play that's in place for a lot of these companies. A lot of them are licensing them to distributors and co-packers in different states, whereas the dispensaries themselves are the ones who would be doing the ordering. So for us, we really have to develop the relationship more so with the co-packer than the brand behind it, because the co-packer is the one that's on the ground level. And as long as we can prove to them our value, they can turn to the brand and say, look, these are the guys to go to. I've always worked with them. They've always been great for me. So that side of it is really important, getting the cheerleaders. But on the dispensary side, really that's developing the relationship with the buyers from the dispensaries and seeing again where their challenges are with growth, because they have so many headaches that come with being a dispensary, including, of course, coordinating with all of these vendors. So I would say that the dispensaries themselves, it's really important to understand their business and their buyers that are actually in place. Whereas for the co-packers, really, we have to identify where we can help them, for instance, on automation, things like that, and really deliver. So that way they're always turning to their licensees and saying, you got to go to these guys.
Fantastic. Awesome answer. Last kind of quick point for me I'd love to make is, it seems to me, you know, obviously THC and marijuana is a beast of its own. Do you expand to first part of this question? Do you expand into the hemp CBD side? Second part, if you do, can you know, there's a lot of lack of, I feel like, regulations in terms of the packaging solutions for CBD and hemp. So I'd love to understand a bit about, or I just love your insights into that and how you respond to that if you package that.
Yeah, it's good. Actually, it's a very good question. So you're absolutely correct. CBD and hemp have very little, if any, packaging regulations, because if they don't have any active THC in it, of course, they're not required to be bound by any of these state laws. So when I look at it, I do think that it's certainly a concern. I think children ingesting any substance, especially dealing with cannabis, looking at our industry and the tough position it's in right now between federal legalization limbo with all the states. So I just think that it's so important for this industry to be behind any sort of extra safety measures that we can put in place. I think that ultimately, without activated THC, of course, a child couldn't, you know, get high or anything like that. But at the end of the day, they could still get sick ingesting any of these substances. And the CBD industry, where it doesn't have active THC and it's not regulated by any of these states, you really don't know what's going into the product. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, having been in the industry now for over 10 years, I think that's the biggest concern of all. Seeing how many companies over the years have been caught either faking numbers or adding additives to it that nobody would have known otherwise, I think is a big cause for concern. So I do think there should be more regulation, especially on the CBD side or the hemp-based CBD, at least to make sure that the quality and the integrity of the product is there. So when it comes to packaging, I think that that goes hand in hand. As long as you have the right regulations in place and make sure, you know, for instance, like seed to sale tracking, things like that, so you know where the product is coming from and you know what's inside of it. I think that that's missing really from that part of the industry.
Well, let's hope it comes soon. So with that, Ross, you know, anything for our audience in terms of the future of Dynapack? I mean, maybe perhaps an IPO one day in the future, who knows, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or 2 months from now, if you want to drop a little hint, or ways for our investors and or our entrepreneurs to check you guys out.
So for us, really, our focus for the future is really developing the business through organic growth. through organic growth and focusing on bringing the best products to market. If we're fortunate enough to have the opportunity to be presented with an IPO, I certainly would love to entertain that if that's a good option for us at the time. But our focus right now solely is on the products. And you know, if people are interested, they could always check out our website, diamondpack.com. They could always reach out to me as well. It's ross@diamondpack.com. But we have a couple of investors. They love working with us. We have good relationships with them. And they've been critical to our growth and to giving us advice and guidance on how to build the business. So for us, yeah, I would say we're not a company focused, let's say, on stock price. We're focused on making it a great business. And I know the stock price would follow in that case. Mm-hmm.
Amen to that, my friend. Said every great CEO there. Ross, thank you so much for joining us. Ross Kirsch, founder and CEO of Dynapack. That's dynapack.com. Really appreciate you being here, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. This was great.
Of course. We'll talk to you soon, my friend. See you around.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. Again, we're bringing you some exciting specials from MJ Biz, catching up on with some amazing executives. One more here for you that I'm super excited about. I've chatted with Rick across the year, but this is Richard Battenberg III is going to be joining us. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Clintel Capital Management and on the Board of Directors for Clear Cannabis. So we're going to touch on some interesting markets like Colorado, maybe get his insights on what's happening on the federal level. But overall, just want to hear about his strategy for investing in the space and where he's at with Clear. Aaron, let's get going, man. I'm excited. Rick, welcome. How's it going?
It is going great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's quite the intro you guys got. I was impressed.
Thanks, man. Thanks. We've been doing this for, gosh, a year and a half, and it feels like we started like 2 months ago. So it changes all the time. But what are you going to do, man? It's great to have you. Like I said, I've known about you guys for a while. I think the first time I talked to you, it was after COVID hit. But since then, you guys have moved pretty quick. So why don't you give me a quick update on your journey into the space and what you do in cannabis?
Sure. You know, so I started my career in 2015 in cannabis. Previous to that, I was at Merrill Lynch, and I did the syndicate, so the IPO new issues, managed some money. And then I really got an interest in doing a lot of private equity deals at Merrill. And then 2015, I kind of saw a capital inefficiency in the Colorado market. At the time, you had to be a 2-year Colorado resident to invest into the space. And I actually ended up being the first qualified institutional investor fund to hold a cannabis license inside of a venture fund by creating a blind pool venture structure that allowed investors to invest into the fund itself and then had a licensed manager at the top of it. So that created a really flexible funding instrument that we used to allocate across the supply chain of cannabis from 2015 to 2017. We owned everything in the supply chain, meaning grow, extraction, dispensary, and then ancillary. So packaging, hardware, compliance, training, leasing. Across the board. And really the point of that was to establish a diligence baseline, because originally what we came in, we thought we'd do some passive investing, and we got in there and go, okay, show us your P&L. They're like, what's a P&L? We're like, oh, okay. And so we quickly learned that we were going to need to take operational control, which was a little bit of a diversion from what I had originally intended on doing in the cannabis industry. But, you know, in doing so, we really got our hands dirty. And I mean that literally and figuratively. We went in and I mean, I've done everything from trim plants to fill cartridges and you know, worked across the supply chain, really so we could understand the supply chain and make intelligible investments. So when I tell you that we're uniquely qualified to make decisions across the cannabis industry, I mean that I mean that because I've got, you know, some dirt under my fingernails, as well as had a kind of macro understanding of the cannabis market. So 2017, we really decided, okay, I think we know where we want to be in the supply chain. We don't necessarily want to be in the business of growing the farm that grows the grain for the Grey Goose. You don't necessarily want to own the liquor store that only has geographic loyalty. You really want to own the brand and distribution. So 2017, we've kind of focused in on brands and distribution. Entered the Clear. The Clear is a distillate brand that was invented in 2013. Actually, the first distillate brand that ever existed. That's why it was called The Clear, because distillate didn't exist yet. They, you know, it was colloquially referred to as The Clear in California.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was totally interesting. So in 2019, we did a full acquisition, rolled together five portfolio companies, as well as part of an APO transaction, acquired a the round lot shareholders of a company called VCAP3, as well as the intellectual property, The Clear, Headspace. So the original founder and inventor of The Clear, Chris Barone, alongside Courtney Maltese and a few other botanists and some very, very smart people. They're still involved in the company. They help us with product dev on that portfolio company. But that product really became famous in the California medical market. And at the time, there was no marketing around it. So we knew the product was really good. So making consumer focused decisions is really what kind of drives the strategy of our fund, is going, okay, who owns the consumer, right? And that's really the key, is who owns the consumer. Cause as this, we get more ubiquitous legalization, it becomes less and less important, you know, where the farms are, because that's becomes commoditized as soon as we are, you know, producing a post-product, you know, post-produced products, meaning, not just the dry flour, right? We're not buying just packaged flour, but you're, you know, buying an edible, or you're buying a concentrate, you're buying, you know, different iterations of the cannabis plant itself. So, you know, our focus is really around consistency, quality, and making sure that a brand is quite simply a expectation of quality. It's not about what celebrities endorsing your brand. It's about when a consumer buys your product, whether that be in Massachusetts or Michigan or Oklahoma, Missouri, Colorado, Nevada, California, where we sell The Clear, it's the same. Because you know, best is subjective. Objectively, this, you know, sorry, the producing a consistent quality product is not subjective. It's objective. But so when you buy a product in Michigan, you buy in California, it's exactly the same. And that's really what defines a brand. And doing that in a space where you have an organic material that even genetically identical plants grown under different conditions will produce different relative weight to volumes of molecular structures, meaning the different minor cannabinoids, major cannabinoids like THC, as well as terpene profiles. It's extraordinarily difficult to create product consistency over state lines, right? Because you can't move the product. So how do you achieve that? And the way that we've taken to achieve that is through process, right? Localizing the production of the terpenes, and then in each market producing just THC distillate, and then making sure that we have quality control over the hardware and packaging that it goes into, as well as the terpene profiles, which are all formulated here in Colorado. Those go out to our different target markets. And that way, when you buy a Blue Raz pen in Michigan, you buy it in Nevada, it's exactly the same. And that's really the strategy that we've taken, is going, okay, well, developing brand and that emotional relationship with the consumer, the most important part, and especially become more and more important as we get more ubiquitous legalization, as we get a commoditization of the supply chain. And we also have, you know, different types of distribution channels, meaning dispensary and delivery and, you know, different ways. So, but that relationship with the consumer becomes very sticky. So that's kind of where we focus as brands and distribution, but apologize for the long-winded answer to it, question, but, that's basically the long and the short of it.
You're giving me a lot to dive in there. So Rick, I appreciate it. Better long-winded than short. So let's get going for maybe one more question here on brands. You went to the product side. So you touched a lot on how you create a consistent product. Sure. Now talk to me a little bit about how you communicate that consistency to the consumers. And what I mean by that is, you know, you see celebrity brands, you see other types of brands out there, and there's a lot of argument about what's actually effective versus here's a brown paper bag full of marijuana.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. And you know what? I think it's less about communication and it's more about delivering. you know, there's a component to this is stand and deliver, right? Yeah. So, you know, you've got Cookies out there, you've got Belushi's Farm, you've got some of these other brands that have some, you know, Tyson's Ranch, you've got some of these great endorsements, but you know, I used to grow the weed for Willie's Reserve. I know what that looks like. And at the end of the day, it's where the proof's in the pudding, right? So forget what you're telling the consumer, because we can talk all day, right? But it's about delivering, right? And when you buy Cookies in California, you buy it in Colorado, it ain't the same thing, period. It's just right. Not. And it's not because they don't mean to. It's because it's not possible, right? You can't deliver the same product with the same relative weight to volumes of the different molecules and the different THC minor cannabinoids, because it's an organic product that even grown under different conditions is going to produce different relative weight to volumes. So the answer to your question is very simply is that for the past 8 years, we continue to deliver a consistent product. So forget communication and just think about the fact that when someone's bought your product twice, have you delivered the same experience, right? And so it's less about what your marketing's saying and more about what you're delivering to the consumer. And so I guess that would be my answer to your question is that, you'll notice we're not that loud from a marketing mm-hmm. perspective, but we do deliver.
Yeah, I love that. So those states you mentioned earlier, how many of those are you all actually in?
All of the ones I named.
Wow, that's huge.
Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic, man. So, and I also looked at your website. You license brands as well, as mm-hmm. well as create your own. So, I mean, are those as valuable? I'm curious how much emphasis that creates in your business.
So, when you talk about licensing brands, so that's really more of a regulatory structure that we have to use to allow ourselves to legally distribute in those states. So depending on this regulatory structure, like I said, our strategy is all about winning the consumer, right? So whether that means we use a contract manufacturing model like we use in California, or we use a partnership model like we use in Nevada with Flower One, so largest facility in North America, we're really kind of agnostic to the structure. It's really about making sure we're staying compliant and legal from a federal perspective. But the reason that we do it that way is very simply because it's about getting the product on as many shelves as possible and not trying to, we're not trying to shoot the moon out from a revenue perspective, because we can only take a very slim margin on what we can actually take out as royalty. But the point of that being is that we know that as regulatory changes continue to proliferate across the United States, that relationship with the consumer is the thing that will become very sticky, right? So that means that as we get more ubiquitous legalization, the bite of that margin we can take is bigger and bigger, and we are winning a very specific game, and that game is the consumer.
Now, shifting gears a little bit here, are you still investing actively in the space
Absolutely.
Through Clintel? And
Absolutely. So it's clientele. So just so
you know.
It's fine. It's a that silly name. It was a legacy name, but I just want to let you know. So it's clientele with two eyes.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, we absolutely still actively invest in the space. And the reason for that is really I find that having a diversity of deals coming at you is a very valuable diligence perspective from a macroeconomic perspective, which means that I like listening to deals and hearing pitches, especially brand pitches. But I have a policy, and Monica sitting right next to me probably laugh at me, but I'll take a 15-minute meeting with anyone. And the reason for that is because they're often people walk in and they don't even really understand what they have, because I have more contextual information than they do, because I've heard so many different pitches. So hearing what people think is going to happen in the market, where they are positioning themselves, is very valuable to me. But we're always looking for brands that have an emotional relationship with the consumer, as well as asymmetrical distribution to what we currently have, meaning whether that's dispensaries or whether that means, international or different markets, or, quite simply, if they access a different demographic, if they service a demographic and solve a specific problem for that demographic, then I would consider that a market that is a little asymmetrical to what we're currently servicing. So we're always looking for products like that. And that's really from a specific focus, we don't really invest in grows anymore. We do still own legacy grows that do really well. But in my opinion, they're very, it's a service-based business and it's capital intensive, which means you're really only going to produce as much as you're willing to invest into that company, which is finite. Same thing with a dispensary, and a dispensary can only do so much volume because it's a limited place. Whereas a brand, we can take internationally. The Clear, for example, has filed trademarks in over 40 different countries and it's approved in over 18. Wow. Right. And we've been doing that for 4 years. So, we have a really long time horizon on what we think is valuable in the cannabis industry. And it's not about how much money can we make today. It's how many of those consumers are going to know the name Clear. And we are the number one most well-known brand in the most competitive cannabis market in the world, which is Colorado, which serves as a very good leading indicator on consumer habits and business regulations, et cetera, for kind of how we're positioning ourselves over the next 10 years.
Fantastic. So kind of to wrap up the brand conversation, I'd love your thoughts on asset light brand models. Sure. So, they have the IP for the brand, but they don't have the cultivation, that type of model.
Sure. I like that model. It can be, it can definitely be frustrating, I think, because you're giving up a lot of control in your supply chain. And then you're also giving up a lot of the gross revenue. So the amount of bite that you can take out of that sale price. So when you're vertically integrated, obviously you can take 100% of what you're going to get at the register level, which is an advantage, right? Because you have the ability to create more margin if you're controlling that supply chain from grow to consumer. But again, that's obviously very capital intensive. And in my opinion, it's short-sighted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was at a conference in Toronto with every major pubco there is, right? Aurora, Cannabis, Tilray. I was, you know, there was only about 150 guys there, but every CEO, CFO of, you know, PharmaCann, Canopy, Aurora, all of them. And in my opinion, a lot of them are focused on the wrong stuff. They're focused on the wrong things. And that's quite simply, I think that there's a regulatory bias around the medical. You know, they're spending millions and millions of dollars researching, you know, how to, markers on each genetics are able to create different, you know, smells and different colors. And there's not a lot of feedback from the consumer going, okay, well, guess what? No matter even if you do produce the same strain, even grown under different conditions, even if you can replicate it, you know, people consuming that product, whether it be an edible or they're dabbing it or that it's a concentrate or it's a flower and they're using a torch versus a butane later versus a, you know, versus different methods of consumption, also paired with the human being's different genetics, is going to affect that person differently. So really spending millions of dollars to make something more purple is sort of hilarious to me in general. But I think that there's a misappropriation because most of the major cannabis companies in the world are owned by Canadian bankers, who created what I'm going to call a SPAC, whether it was a SPAC or not. That was entirely their strategy, was we're going to go buy assets, right? We're going to raise a bunch of money and then we're going to go buy non-correlated assets so that we can stitch them together. So our revenue catches up to what they think their valuation should be. When you're raising money at 182 times forward earnings, I mean, I can't blame them, but I mean, at the same time, you didn't build a company that was focused on the consumer. You built a company that was focused on the investor, which is just a different strategy. And I think it's a strategy that is going to come, you know, if it hasn't already, right, the reckoning has come, right? Like, we're seeing those valuations drop, not because they're not doing well, but because the valuations were preposterous in the beginning. So there's a lot of upset investors, which is why we're seeing this kind of roller coaster and seeing these valuations kind of come back to earth. But those aren't making consumer-focused decisions, right? Those are making investors-focused decisions, which is just a different type of strategy. Right. You know, I think that the most undervalued asset in cannabis right now is private U.S. cannabis companies that have a brand and a relationship with the consumer and real distribution. Because right now, it's very difficult for an investor to invest in those type of companies. And, you know, as we're seeing regulatory shift, we're going to see the power of those companies start to come to fruition as the power is starting to move away from, you know, the top of the supply chain, who's got product, and move more towards the consumer, which is like, okay, well, here's what I want in my products. Here's what I want in my edible. Here's what I want in my vape. And that's going to continue to shift kind of the way we saw, what you see it in alcohol, right? Where you don't go to, I went to this liquor store because it's so fancy. No, they don't care, right? At all, right? What they care about is that they carry Grey Goose or that they carry Makers or they carry whatever your brand is. And that's ultimately where the market is headed. And I think we're seeing that really illustrated well in Colorado, where we're seeing the amount of medical cards decrease, right? So we're seeing medical sales decrease. And the reason that's important is because Colorado is such a good leading indicator, but there's a lot of hoop jumping for a consumer to get a medical card when the product, you know, all these pubcos are really focused on, you know, making it medical and all the trying to figure out all the minor cannabinoids and what they do to people and custom make these strains that people want. And I'm like, you know, you're watching the data, you're not looking at your own data, right? And your own data is saying that once people aren't afraid of this product, you know, they don't care about dosing anymore. The exact strain number, right? What they care about is getting high, right? So there's a really big component of this, which is just fun, is missing from a lot of these strategies. And I think it's going to come back to bite them, you know, really, because the amount of money they're investing is not into where I think the market's headed, and they're misappropriating their own data with regulatory bias instead of looking at the consumer, making consumer focused decisions. They're almost romantic for the medical component. And I'm not sure if that's just because, you know, they're always entering new markets and that's kind of the line you got to toe with the regulators. But I think when you look at the real markets, the most mature cannabis markets in the world, like Colorado, the data is telling you something else. And I think that unless they're willing to make a shift or at least look at their own data, they might be in a little bit of trouble.
Interesting analysis, man. I mean, it's very interesting to hear SPACs discussed like this. I don't think we've had that on the show before, so thank you. Sure. I'll end with this to A, not make you say anything you don't want to, and B, to be respectful of your time.
Sure.
Should a private cannabis company still, is it still a good time to consider listing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So especially with, because there's so much retail attention, retail investment trading, you know, any company that has already has a consumer base, that's then now's a great time to raise money doing that. Right. And especially if you're a real company, not just a company built in flash and built in, you know, hey, we're a cannabis company, so it's sexy. But if you're a real company that has a real connection with the consumer, those are the type of companies that you're going to want to hold on to that stock, because those companies are going to get more and more valuable. So one, the private market of cannabis in general is just a really difficult market, right? Debt is extraordinarily expensive. There's only a finite amount of people that you can touch these type of deals. So generally, these cannabis companies get beat up really bad on their valuations when they're going to a venture cap group or a private equity group or a family office, whoever. So going directly to your consumer, you know, your best investors are your consumers, right? So how do you get to your consumers? And quite frankly, the only way to get to them is via going public. So I think now is a perfect time, you know, and you really always have to look at the public markets on a much longer timeline. You know, it's not about, because you can't time the market, right? Having I did 203 transactions at Merrill when I was there on the buy side of new issues, and you can't time the market, right? So the strategy is either good or it's bad, and it's not. And if the strategy is predicated on market timing, there's a problem. That's a problem. Right. So you really got to think about it from a 10-year timeline. And does it make sense to be public 10 years from now if you're a private cannabis brand? Probably. If you're a good brand, it probably does. Right. It's part of the reason you saw Tesla perform is not necessarily because people are looking at financials. People are like the product. Right. Yeah. And so they're making emotional decisions. And I don't think that market sentiment is going to decrease. I think we're going to see that market sentiment increase as, you know, access to capital and access to, you know, even these Reg A's, Reg A pluses, like these guys are able to invest in these companies a lot more simply because of the infrastructure that's been created by, you know, Robinhood and these different trading accounts. And it makes it very easy for people to go, oh, I'd like that product. I'd like that company. I'd like buy the story and I'm buying the stock. It's a lot simpler than it used to be even 10 years ago, even 20 years ago, when it was it was a lot of rigmarole for them to try to make that investment. And now it's as simple as, you know, a few seconds, they got it.
Thank you for saying rigmarole. Sure. Rick, this has been awesome, man. I know I got to let you go. Thank you so much. I'd love to get a sequel here, chatting about your thoughts on the federal scene, especially as a banker, the JP Morgan news. It's interesting to me, but we'll have to be another time. Yeah. Yeah. I think a sequel, maybe Q1 next year. Let's get you back on. But
I'd be honored. Hey, yeah. Thank you guys so much. You guys have a great production here. And, you know, I'm obviously honored to be on and honored to come on whenever you would like some comment, or, you know, I'm always great. Happy to be a contrarian.
Touche, my friend. Touche. Well, thank you again. We hopefully will see you soon. Happy holidays. And well, best of luck with Clear, my friend.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Talk soon.
Cheers. All right. Thanks, everybody. That was a blast. That was the Chief Investment Officer of Clientele Capital Management Group. Thanks again to Rick. Thanks again to Maddie at Grasslands for setting that up. Fantastic conversation. And I do want to get his thoughts on JP Morgan, which maybe we'll have to do offline, as well as the Republican bill that just came out on Friday. But tune into Cannabis Daily every morning at 10 a.m. That's on our podcast page, and Cannabis Hour twice a week on our YouTube. Until next time, y'all.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.